Welcome back to our Wednesday WHUR WHUT TV edition of the Daily Drum. We continue our discussion, Black American and Black immigrant relations in the DMV. How is it going? And where are the opportunities to make the connections better? Well, tonight's Daily Drum is being streamed live on WHUT TV's YouTube page. You can join the conversation at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Get in on the discussion online using the hashtag DMVBlack. My guests are Crystal Oriada, Prince George's County Council member representing District 7, Reverend Jonathan Weaver, president of the Pan-African Collective, and Anne-Marie Corr, Jamaican immigrant and founder of My Africa Family Reunion. Let me go to the phone lines. Gary, calling from Baltimore. Gary, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, pleasant good evening, Mr. Fisher, and to your distinguished guests. I guess my question is, I've heard tonight the words ignorant and intentional. They kind of pop out from the conversation tonight. And my question is, do my African brothers and sisters intentionally have they created a divide between themselves and the African Americans who, you know, we share the same culture? The reason I say that is because I have some African brothers and sisters in my neighborhood, and I speak to them, you know, every time I see them when they'll let me. But they seem to intentionally turn away as if they are separating themselves from African Americans. Is there some type of psychological or cultural something that's caused this divide?
I think that's a great question, Gary. Councilman, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think the intentionality and the ignorance is both ways. So the idea that lies just at the feet of African Americans is not true, right? And I've seen that firsthand. To your point, there are some people that I know that are from African descent that have perceptions of Black America.
What are those perceptions?
Perceptions of laziness, perceptions of that we use racism as a crutch, and an intentionality to distance themselves from any correlation of what it means to be Black in America, because that's seen as lesser, and wanting to be seen as African or an immigrant and not associated with the criminality or the poverty that's associated with being Black in America. And I've, you know, heard friends that are African say that they didn't think racism was real, and they thought that our community was just lazy and that we just use that as an excuse. So I say that to say it. And again, I think it's intentionally programmed into both communities. The divide, so that we can't be a united community of just Black people, is intentionally done. And we have to take an active role into breaking down those barriers, and we have to take responsibility of not soaking up and repeating those things to our children and to shedding those ignorances that we hold. But I definitely think that there's ignorance on both sides of the aisle. It's not just with African Americans, but I see it, you know, also with my African brothers and sisters as well.
Gary, thank you so much for the question. Anne-Marie, you are nodding your head.
Yeah, and I totally agree, because it's not just with people of African descent and Africa, but also with the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. You have breakdowns in countries where I am from Jamaica, I am from Guyana, I am from Trinidad, I am from here. And again, there's a divide, and it's...
But let me ask, but what's wrong with having pride in where you're from?
It's bigger than pride.
It is?
It's sometimes I am better than. So pride is wonderful, because it's what we learn, is the norms and mores, the values that we learn in each of our countries that we hold on to. But when you take it to a place where... you think that you are better than, or, you know, you think that you're here and up here and someone is down there, that's when it becomes an issue, because it shouldn't be an issue. pride is cultural pride and country pride is wonderful, but we, like Councilwoman said and Pastor, we have to look beyond those boundaries and those barriers and really start saying, first of all, we are African, or children of African descent, and then build from there.
Pastor, you have a unique position. I'm sure you've engaged in some of these kinds of barrier breaking conversations. Take me inside some of those conversations with Black immigrants that you've had in your work.
Well, I've had a score of aha moments that have taken place. Yeah, largely because at least there were attempts at communication. Dr. Martin Luther King talked about Sunday morning at 11 o'clock being the most segregated hour. Well, I'm afraid that, quite frankly, here in America, we are indeed segmented almost every day. But I'm suggesting that one of the things that we can do is to create forums, if you will, where people come together and learn how to appreciate the culture of Jamaica, the culture of countries in Africa, and also for our brothers and sisters, whether or not they come from Rwanda or Sierra Leone or Zimbabwe, to be able to hear the experience of African Americans.
But what have you heard? What have they said to you in those conversations?
They've heard what they saw on television. Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, on most of the media, the television stations that I've watched while I'm in Africa, give you a rather dim portrayal of African Americans.
Such as?
Oh, my goodness. Well, to articulate and to repeat basically what the councilwoman has said, the portrayal is of Africans being lazy, not willing to work hard, that they're not desirous of education, they don't aspire, and that's what our brothers and sisters are seeing on the television, in the movies. Now, it's gone beyond, of course, the blaxploitation movies of the 70s. However, it's not much better. And as a result of that, they're getting a stereotypical notion of what African Americans look like, how they act, which is a terrible, gross distortion of the reality.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. John, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for hanging on, John. What's on your mind?
How you guys doing? Hello to your guest, your distinguished guest, and you, Harold.
Thank you. Go right ahead.
Yes, I just want to say I've been around in D.C. for 40 years, and so I've been around two generations, and my heyday was back in the 90s. And what I heard from a lot of Africans was that they were, like the Reverend said, they were watching TV. And this one brother said that when he came over here, he thought he was going to get a Benz and some jewelry and do like all the hip-hop stars. I said, are you serious? He said, that's what they beamed to us on TV over there. So we thought that Black people in America was really coming up in a way that they saw. And then when they got here, they said, wait a minute, something's wrong. I said, well, that's some truth for some people, but that's a different culture. You know, that's a different business, a different culture. Another thing I would get with Africans, and I've never had a problem with Africans and people from other countries, especially being Black, when they would tell me, I say, what's your name? And naturally it would be a cultural name. And I say, well, they would say, call me Freddie. And I say, no, I will not call you Freddie. You will teach me how to pronounce your name because you are here and you will be respected. And I want you to understand that when you're here. So that was my boot camp for every African I meet, young people. What's your name? No. Don't give me the American name. Give me your tribal name. Give me a name that you could teach me. Tell me what it means. Tell me where it came from. That's how I get educated from them. And they really appreciate it. And I said, don't never water down your name. That is something that is you. That identifies you. And if you do that, you become American.
John, thank you so much, John. That truly is a thing of respect, and I think a lot of people really respect that, and certainly a feather in your cap for sharing that with us. You know, Anne-Marie, I want to ask you this question. I'm trying to be delicate, but I guess I won't. So, In your opinion, do you believe that there is tension between African American women and Black women immigrants?
Yes.
Why is that?
Yes. There are a lot of judgments. You know, when we look at the TV shows, when we look at the media, when we see what is portrayed of women of African-American descent, lots of times they don't show us, or African-Americans, in the positive light, succeeding, doing well, being educated, giving back to the community, building the community, having wonderful families. So it's quick to judge, to say, you know, we from the Caribbean, or we from Africa, we have families, we have education, we have, we come to America, and you know, in 10 years, we have our dream home. We have our education with our letters behind our names, and you have been here so long and nothing has happened.
But I'm speaking specifically of social interaction. I'm not talking about big picture intellectual exercise. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, you see an African sister in the grocery store at Wegmans, mm-hmm. and you know, and
we don't say hello. We don't say hello because sometimes it's a fear. Or sometimes, again, is thinking that, oh, it's just them, and it's the them word. Or, you know, but we don't say hello. But if we see someone in the grocery store that's Jamaican, or we think it might be Jamaican or from the Caribbean, we quickly say hello to that person and smile. And if we have a coupon, extra coupon, you'll give that to that person. But if it's an African-American, you literally walk past and don't say anything. And I've seen it with my friends who are from Africa as well. It's we connect with whatever that common denominator is that makes us comfortable. And we stay in our own little space. Everyone stays in their space because it's comfortable, it's safe. And so we don't really interact unless we're giving an opportunity like Reverend did when he had his event, or like we're trying to do here, where everyone is under the same umbrella and we have people in the audience that's saying, let's connect. And is it through music? Is it through poetry? Is it through something that we can all, you know, bond with? Then we might see a common denominator and where we come together, but we all go into our own little corners because it feels safe.
But is this council member, and I'll probably pay for this later, but I'm asking specifically about Black immigrant women and African American women. And the reason I say that is because, and maybe it's just me, I've been accused of being too evolved.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take that. Mm-hmm. But when I was growing up, my parents were educated. Daddy went to Howard, mother went to DC Teachers College there, and they went during the late 50s and 60s. They had interactions with Black immigrants, African Jamaican. My stepfather is from, my late stepfather is from the Caribbean. And so growing up, I had the benefit of not being fed ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously everyone doesn't have that kind of blessing. That being said, I'm a man, but mm-hmm. Is there a tension between Black women and Black women immigrants?
Mm-hmm. I think there's some cultural tension that happens that I've seen, like when I've seen some of my American friends like dating African men and that interaction with their sisters and mothers, and how American Black women sometimes are not viewed as traditional women and not of high value women, and sometimes it's seen as they don't want you to marry an American woman, like they want you to marry an African woman, even if they're not exactly from your country, but at least they understand your culture. There's this feeling that there's a lack of respect for the culture, or those traditional values of like, do we want to have children? Do we cook? Do we believe in bringing our man or serving the men in the home first?
Uh-oh.
There's a lot of tension I've seen between the perception of what it means to be a wife and what it means to be a woman that I've seen, especially generationally. Like, I see the tension more in relationships where you have two cultures trying to intertwine, where I'm seeing my friends that are American and my friends that are African, and they're dating and blending their cultures. And sometimes the mothers have a lot of tension with those women, especially if they have children already. And so I think there can feel like there's some judgment about Black American women, that we are more promiscuous, that we don't know how to take care of our home, that we prioritize ourselves more than we prioritize a family. And I think I've seen that tension, especially in relationships like that. And that's usually where I see it. I don't see it as much just with common interaction between women, but once you put the blending of the two families together, I have seen relationships end because mothers will not accept that they feel like there's this distance between the culture of the bride or the girlfriend, and they want a more traditional woman that has what they feel are African traditional values.
That's a lot. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. Mariah calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Mariah. What's on your mind?
Yes. I wanted to just mention, I'm from Monrovia, Liberia, was where I was born. And I was brought here by my sister and her family, and then I ended up being adopted. And lived with a Black American. I was adopted by a Black American female. So I've been here since 1979, and I had the most difficult time in school simply because, not from white people, but it was mostly from African Americans, because I didn't feel like I belonged. They made fun of me. I was ostracized, and the whole gamut. And even now as an adult, when I go in circles where there are African Americans, I'm always approached by someone Black, and they're, oh, where are you from? And I'll tell them, and I'm like, oh, okay, I thought you were American. But I've been here since 1979. I'm 50-something years old now, and I've been here all my life. I went back to Africa after 1979 for the first time in 2020. So I feel like Black Americans refuse to even associate with Africans, especially from my experience. I just feel I try my best when I see people, I go up and talk to them. I'm a nurse by profession, so I'm a people person. So I try to be friendly and talk to people. And if I speak to an African American female, sometimes they answer, sometimes they don't, you know, and then, or sometimes they'll come back up to me after not speaking to me and say, oh, where are you from? That's the first question. Mm. Instead of, hello, how are you? I get, where are you from? And then I feel like they're trying to ostracize me or separate me from, or tell me I'm not Black.
Yeah.
And I say, oh, but what color are Africans?
Yeah.
Oh, they're Africans, but they're not Black.
Yeah. Mariah, thank you for sharing with us. Reverend, what advice would you give to her to address the what may be perceived hostility or at best xenophobia?
I think it's something that is not only something that she should do, but also how we need to be within the African American community, far more proactive and open and prepared to learn. We do indeed have an extreme Americanization in our thinking. We're very insular. We're very isolated. We hardly would be able to name five African nations. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you were in Zambia, they would be able to rattle off not only the name of our president, but perhaps a whole lot of other elected officials as well.
But what should she do when she's approached like that?
I think she should take that as an opportunity to share more, to not give up, but to be even more resolute, to be able to let people know about her heritage, her rich heritage. And even though somebody may rebuff her initially, to keep trying. If we're ever going to be able to bring together people, it's because we're willing to communicate with one another. Mm-hmm. So I would say to her, please don't give up, but make it a point to be proud of your heritage, but also be proud of the fact that you've been here now since 1970, whatever it was, mm-hmm. and to be able to convey that message. And to be, I would say that, yes, it's partly therefore not only being proud of your heritage and where you're from, but indeed knowing full well you're not going to be able to convince everybody. But there will be some that will be able to have that aha moment mm-hmm. and learn and appreciate more about you than ever before.
Mariah, thank you so much for your phone call. Gerald, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Gerald. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Harold, and thank you, guests. This is a great subject. I am a rideshare driver. I'm 61. I'm learning 20 languages. Hmm. And each and every day, somebody gets in my car from any country in Africa. I talk to them. People from Kenya, I'm learning Swahili. I'm learning French. I'm learning Spanish. I'm learning Igbo. I'm learning Yoruba. I'm learning Efik. And I'm going to keep on and continue because I can do this while I'm driving. I drive about 12 hours a day. When I come in, they come in my car, we have a conversation. It's the most beautiful warmth. You know, they smile. I'll say something in their language. They'll smile. We'll talk about different things. It's the greatest thing. And if I can help, you know, blend it, close that gap or, you know, bridge it, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Gerald, thank you so much. That's a very inspiring comment. Thank you so much. Let me go to Teresa. Teresa calling from Virginia. Teresa, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. Hi. And hello to your guests. So I want to come from a different perspective. I would hope that Africans, people who come here, Africans, would also understand the pain of slavery and Jim Crow. And because just like a few of your other callers have said, they think that we're lazy. They don't understand that these systems that were built against us. And I actually been to two countries. I've been to Senegal and I've been to Sierra Leone. And in both countries, just casual conversation. And this was actually right before President Obama's first inauguration. One gentleman told me, I'm very happy for America, but I do not consider President Obama in. But, oh, by the way, his father is truly African for him to be African. And when I got to I had to go to the border, and I said I was African American, and the guy looked at me and he said, African American. Like, you know, they don't really understand the pain. And then the last thing I want to say is that on Friday I get my hair braided. I was getting my hair braided because Saturday I participated in the march, and my braider, good person, she's from Nigeria. She had no really concept of Martin Luther King and why we were marching, and she's been here for 5 years. So I just say that I want African people to understand the pain. We were brought here in the transatlantic slave. We were brought here. We did not raise our hands. Our ancestors were brought here, and that's the only thing I want them to understand and become knowledgeable about it. Thank you so much. I love your show.
Thank you so much, Teresa.
And these are opportunities like the young man Jack just spoke. When we get these opportunities, for example, when you're in the salon braiding your hair, it's a wonderful opportunity for you to engage because you're going to be sitting there getting your hair braided for a few hours. You can be an amazing educator to teach because lots of the people who come here don't know. And every opportunity that we get is an opportunity to teach. And every opportunity that we get is an opportunity to learn. So let's use that exchange, those moments to exchange knowledge. And each of us will walk away from the conversation more educated, more enlightened, and more in love with who we are and celebrate each other's culture. So let's use opportunities, every opportunity that we get. And sometimes create opportunities. You're in a neighborhood and you see your kids playing with kids from other cultures and you're having a barbecue, invite the entire family. Buy a few more hot dogs and invite the family. While you're there, you have great conversations. You can talk about this. You can show videos. let's use the opportunities and create opportunities to blend, to become one, to unite, and to just love on each other.
Councilmember Oriana, I'm a little surprised by Teresa's comments, but you alluded to it earlier that, you know, black immigrants from Africa don't believe that racism, some do not believe that racism is real. How is that possible? Are they also not getting information about the transatlantic slave trade, racism? Because I would imagine, you know, particularly when we talk about police brutality, for example, a brother from Nigeria with an accent could very well run the same risk as someone like Reverend Reaver or myself from getting the head cracked open if they move the wrong way or say the... And so how is it possible they don't know?
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to the fundamentals around education, right? We barely know our history, right? It's barely taught to us here in America, let alone it being taught to generations as they come up in African nations. So then when they move here, the base is what they've seen on TV and what they've experienced. They don't know anything different. And so I'll never forget, my dad told me that he didn't understand racism and did not believe it was a thing until he experienced himself living in Texas. And now my dad is very much, you know, taking up what's happened to African Americans as if he's experienced, and that's his heritage and his history just as much, being from Africa. And it was because of what you just said. He experienced it firsthand. It was when they were pulled over and they were driving in a back road with my mother and my father, and he was going to get out of the car because he got pulled over and have a conversation, because to him, that's nothing to get out of the car and speak to the police officer. My mom had to say, do not get out of the car. Don't open the door. They will kill you.
Mm.
And that interaction and how the officer treated him in that day was his first experience of real racism in this country. And so, sadly, I think there is this learning curve that a lot of people, after they've lived here, depending upon where they live, that they're going to experience it. And they're going to experience it firsthand. But then also, there is this reality that there is a different treatment from immigrants and African Americans in this country. And that's a real thing that we have to unpack. I think when we talk about just immigration across the board, and how if you're from different countries, it's easier to have access to sometimes capital than it is as an African American if you go to the bank and try to get access to capital. So there's some situations where still some people will not understand, what do you mean you can't go get money and start a business? Because we can, in our culture. We had no problem starting this business or doing this. And so that when we talk about like redlining and the history of like banks and the history of agriculture and taking our land back and the systemic separation of wealth, there's still a disconnect there. And so I think it's all of those things that's a perfect storm of why they say they don't understand the racism. And sadly, a lot won't understand it unless they experience it firsthand.
I only have a few minutes left. I wanted each of you to kind of share how you believe this situation can be remedied. What is the fix to bridging the gap? I'll start with you, Anne-Marie.
Yes, for me, one of the remedies is to, like I mentioned before, start creating opportunities with your children. You have children, invite children of other African groups, whether it's from Africa or the Caribbean, African American, to come together in your homes, in your community, have just local things, and make sure that we talk about, you know, what's going on with us. What are some of our history? We have a lot of games now that are out there that teaches history, for example, of South Africa. If I speak to someone from South Africa, they have a very, very different view than someone from anywhere else in Africa. Mm-hmm. They understand the African-American struggle because, you know what? They had apartheid.
Right.
So it's not just it's not the whole continent of Africa that has an issue with, you know, how we see African-Americans as lazy. No, because they're going through it right now. Mm-hmm. They're sometimes, when you go to some of the places in South Africa, it's where we were in the 1970s and 80s.
There,
and we can help that community and by giving them some of the solutions that we have had in America to help them move forward quicker and to create some results.
And also, I want to remind people that the my Africa family reunion is going to be on September 9th, Northeastern grounds of the Washington Monument. That is 1 week from this coming Saturday, September 9th. Reverend, real quick, I'll give you a minute.
Everybody that has been involved in some way with trying to create stronger relationships between African Americans and people from within the diaspora, we've got to seize opportunities at every turn. Wherever we can have that, by the way, conversation,
right.
We need to be doing that. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's within the faith community, and not just within churches, but in the mosque, the Islamic community as well, we've got to make sure to be able to share our story, but likewise make sure that we're listening to the story of others as well, and appreciating the stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And the stories, if you listen, they're good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, and informative, council member.
I think it all comes down to education and exposure. I think we have to be intentional about embedding the real history of our culture in our education system. And then we, as individuals, have to expose ourselves. If that's exposing ourselves to our neighbors, friends, or exposing ourselves by traveling and exposing ourselves to those cultures. And if we do those two things, I think we'll start to see those generational stigmas break down on both sides.
I think this has been an absolutely wonderful conversation. I want to thank you all for coming in and talking to us and bringing your varied experiences. And we could talk about this for yet another hour. Hopefully we've helped someone. So again, thank you so much for sharing with us on this personal and important issue. Now I have some final thoughts about this, by the way. You know, as a child, and I mentioned this earlier, you know, my parents always taught me to embrace where I came from, not just my Southern Maryland and Carolina roots, but finding and connecting with my African and Caribbean roots. And it is easier for you to do this now than ever before, because the Black immigrants who can help you connect, they live in your community. They are your neighbors, your coworkers, they're your colleagues. And as the saying goes, if you don't know, you better ask somebody. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid to ask respectfully. I'm sure it will be the beginning of a bond. That's the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, August 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.